Poetic peeps and gentle persons, and betweeners and non-performers, genders all and genders equal. Welcome back to Eat the Storms, the poetry podcast for the second half of season 8. My name is Damien B. Donnelly. I get to be your host and producer, and thank you so much for tuning in today, tomorrow, next year, or even yesterday on your preferred podcast platform, which may be Spotify, Apple, Google, Breaker, Podbean, Player FM, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Castbox, Podcast Addicts, or iTunes. Welcome to episode 9. We are now officially beyond the halfway mark of season 8, and for the next month, we have bumper episodes. Today, we are celebrating poets who have new collections, glorious lights that need a place on your bookshelves, whether just arriving or recently published. Next week, we have an episode dedicated to new voices to the podcast and spoken word voices to the podcast. Following that, we have a special episode dedicated to this year's 2024 awardees of the Northern Soul Roadshow, in conjunction with the Arts Council of Northern Ireland and the Irish Writers' Centre, and curator and facilitator Fiona O'Rourke. And I was honoured to be among the awardees this year, so I can highly recommend it for next year. But before that, of course, on the 25th of this month, we have a very special episode to celebrate Poetry Day Ireland, where we have 32 poets on the podcast, each one reading one poem to represent one of the 32 counties on this glorious island of Ireland. And then, toward the end of the month, we have another special episode, this time dedicated to Turris Press, who are very graciously publishing my second collection, Back From Away. And that is going to be launched at the Irish Writers' Centre on the 8th of May, along with the new collection from Emma McCurvey, Highland Boundary Fault. So we have a special episode of the podcast dedicated to Tourist Press poets, and Liz McSkeen, its editor, will join me for our Behind the Storms interview. So it really and truly is a bumper month for poets and a bumper month for the poetry podcast. Now, for today, as I said, it's all about new collections and pamphlets. So I suggest you buckle up on the sofa, make sure there's a cheeky gin, or a fresh brew of tea, a slice of cake, or a ginger biscuit. My name is Damien B. Donnelly, this is Eat the Storms, and I hope you enjoy the show. We are kicking off the show today with a new voice to literature who many of you may not have even heard of, but he's probably one to listen out for in the future. Of course, in truth, I jest. Because my first guest on the show today won the Laurel Prize in 2021 for his debut poetry collection, Tongues of Fire. He was then shortlisted for the Sunday Times Young Writer of the Year Award, and shortly afterwards the Sunday Times chose him as one of their 30 under 30 artists in Ireland. He followed that with a book on J.M. Synge, Nature, Politics, Modernism, published by Oxford University Press, and then came his memoir, All Down Darkness Wide, published by Jonathan K. Press in the United Kingdom and Penguin Press in the United States. That was 2022, and it was shortlisted for the Biography of the Year Award at the On Post Book Awards, the Foyles Book of the Year in Nonfiction, and the Polari Prize. And when I recall my winter reading, everything else was eclipsed by reading this memoir. He won the Rooney Prize for Irish Literature in 2022 and then published 300,000 Kisses, Tales of Queer Love from the Ancient World, illustrated beautifully by Luke Edward Hall. Earlier this year, he presented us with his second collection, Rapture's Road, from which you're going to hear a piece today. So brace yourselves, this is breathtaking. Let me hand you over to Sean Hewitt.
Hi, this is Sean Hewitt, and I'm delighted to be asked to read for the podcast today. I'm going to read from my new collection, which is called Rapture's Road. It's out now with Jonathan Cape. I think I'm just going to read one poem, but it's a poem in three parts. It's called Whoso List to Hunt. 1. There are knives in the night, ghosts, the air sword fighting with itself. I wake alone, call the lift, and descend in its box of light to the empty street, somewhere on the cusp of a dream, passing through the turnstile's white iron star to the field, bladed with ice. And then I hear it, the dark clicking the sockets of the hawthorns, and in the home oaks, a dull thwack of bone on bone, the rush of leaves as a branch is flung and shattered, the young deer rotting, one shadow hurled into the next, and I am cleaved in the sweat, in the steam of their bodies. Now, again, I break as they lock the cross of their sex in place. Who is it that splinters out and steps towards them? What new soul is fractured from the sound? 2. For years, in secret, I had longed to shake the safehold, to cast myself among the battery as though love in its arms held me back. And here, in the aftermath, stampeded, I found a crow's egg fallen from the nest, smeared among the broken stems of yellow archangel I knelt to, the furred hoods of the flower held over the streaked red tongues, their little pietas of pollen dashed on the soil like the ends of my wanting. And I was meshed in guardianship, the desolation of the hooves, all the soft parts blood powers through. And I came home to find you waiting. All night, like God into a flower, like God into a bird, I tried to throw myself out of myself and into my word. 3. In autumn, I will come back alone for the snapped antler, the blown prostate of a chestnut shell, yellowed and bitter underfoot, and see only the trees ruining over lacerated ground. And I will recall the bulge of the stag's throat sliding up with each grunt hollow, and push my fingers into their lashed wood for the musk of those hot glands, the stain of urine smeared from the furry sheath, and taste in it a memory of violence, its urgent expenditure here, where now mist and quiet are the only wanderers copulating in fall's patient, declining land.
We are heading off to Bonn in Germany now for a British poet who is the founder of Rainbow Poems, editor of Sonnets for Shakespeare Anthology, and the Poetry Society's stanza representative for Germany. Her poems have appeared in numerous places, including The High Window, Ink, Sweat and Tears, Obsessed with Pipework, Lighthouse, Skylight 47, and I was overjoyed that she was one of the contributors to The Storms, our journal of poetry, prose and visual arts. Previously, she was on the podcast sharing poems from her debut pamphlet, We Wear the Crown, published by Hedgehog Poetry Press back in 2022. And today, she is reading from her prize-winning chapbook, Loggerheads, which won the Broken Spine Annual Chapbook Competition last year, and pre-orders are coming out later this month. So get yourself ready, and while you're preparing space for her chapbook on your bookshelves, you might as well make enough room for her full collection, because it's coming very soon from Yaffle Press. I'm so delighted that she is with us today and hopeful that she'll come back again later this year. But for now, let me hand you over to the exquisite Lucy Hoyshen.
Hello, I'm Lucy Hoyshen, a London-born poet based in the beautiful Rhineland in Germany. I'm really excited to be back with you at Eat the Storms to read a few poems from my forthcoming chapbook, the winner of the 2023 Broken Spine chapbook competition. The chapbook is called Loggerheads and charts my journey through a London childhood, trying to make my own way in the world and in various relationships, successful and not so successful. And I'm going to start with a kind of sonnet for my twin, Kate. Twin. She's a few breaths older, taller by half a mother's hand. She's got henna in her short hair, prefers her nails black, wears an Amnesty International t-shirt and a single piercing. She's the first to try smoking, the first to figure out how to hide a stub in the palm of a hand. In the bathroom, she strokes and holds back my hair after my first puff. It's she who teaches me to wrap my fist around my keys, reminding me, I punch with my left, you with your right. She wants to be in the same class at our next school, but I force the separation. I want to strike out on my own. I am demarcating and cultivating my edges, seeking mutations away from our helix, hoping the incision will be painless. For my next poem, I'll read you Move Closer, which was longlisted for the YAFL Poetry Prize last year. Move Closer. After hours of crimping our hair, I'm more Molly Ringwald than Madonna, but it's time. Come on, girls, they're playing Wham. A final slick of Fruity Body Shop lip gloss, a tug at my black dotty pea dress. The boys are loitering by the benches, none of them the equal of George Michael, except one. And he's coming my way, dear Lord, in a haze of sun-in and studio line, and I am smiling, saying, okay, while inside I'm Cherry Coke and trying not to faint as Phyllis Nelson starts to sing, Move Closer. I can't look at him directly. Oh, his hands, where my dress scoops low at the back. I'm forgetting to breathe, I am moving closer like the song says, and for a moment I'm Levi's and California tan and lace. But then it's over, he's running back to the lads, where the talk is penalties and offside traps, and the girls pull me into a strange new orbit for a full post-match analysis, play by play. My next poem is for my grandmother, Kath. The Rats of Woolwich Arsenal. Rats dance on rooftops as you make Dar his breakfast. Bells clang for first shift. Men file to the arsenal. Sudden peace, unlike any time your men are at home. Turn to broken pipes, patch jobs, shirt strip bandages. Natural matron, you know hospital corners. A plan for night school, pencil tucked behind your ear. You aim to work hard, earn a sweet tea-dancing life. Home on leave, he sweeps your plans away for his dreams. A baby comes, too. Your shelter, hipped and stable. Rats waltz through your nights, tap like rain through London clay. My next poem is something a little bit different, and it's inspired by a female giant tortoise who was recently discovered on a remote island in the Galapagos Island chains. Fernanda the Giant. You try to make me over, Cinderella in a half shell. You think I'm lonesome under my tough exterior. You set me up with a guy who chases and harasses. He's all sniff, scrape, nip, thrust, bellow and groan. I try my moves, feigning sleep, rotating my body, pushing him out of me. But he's a big old alpha with bullish charisma. After he's sauntered off, I imagine our young, scorching on sterile rock. You can set me up again, make yourself feel better. Alone is nature's armour, like keratin in my DNA. The next poem is about those little badges that you get as a pregnant person on public transport to encourage others to give you a seat. Badge. Bright little badge, I could let you take a perch on my lapel, pin you to my oversized leather handbag, your exclamation mark asserting that you are undeniably, joyfully on board for the morning scuffle. Bright little badge, I could let you expose me to a stranger's mercy, force them into a London ice slide. My left hand grips a strap up high, while my right smooths grey serge over the tiny, rounded secret of you. Before I read my last poem, I'd like to say a heartfelt thanks to Damien B. Donnelly. Dami, you're doing wonders with this podcast, and I am really grateful to be a part of it again, so thank you for having me back. This is the last poem I'll read to you today from my chapbook, Loggerheads, and it's after a poem called Roots by Lucille Clifton. Don't write poems about the moon. The moon is not a suitable subject for poetry, the tutor opines. And I think of a London night, the drum of hard rain easing to alchemic silence. I sought the warm, dry place inside your jacket, wriggled my fingers against you that first night. The moon is cliché, passé, she's been overdone. And I think of the stretch of our together years, the times I lay beside you in the silver afterward, running a finger along your cheekbone, memorising the amber crescent of your scars. But the moon is not suitable. Forget her. Write about other things, he recommends. And I think of Lucille Clifton, how she speaks, not of trees at all, but roots, falling leaves, earth and bark, the light and life of us. So forgive me, dear tutor, but I'll keep on writing poems about and not at all about the moon.
We are coming back to Ireland now for our next guest, who's originally from Longford, and he's here today to share poems from his most recent collection, Vital, published by Compost Poetry in 2023. He is a retired teacher of English and drama, and his collections include The Point of Singing from Abbey Press in 1999, Interacting, 60 drama scripts from Russell House Publishing in 2007, The Scale of Things, published by Salmon Poetry in 2013, followed by For Crying Out Loud in 2017, and now Vital. He was the editor for Teachers Who Write from Waterford Teacher Centre in 2018, and Entry and Exit Wound in 2021, the text to accompany music composed by Grainne Mulvey and performed at the Smock Annie Theatre here in Dublin. It is with great pleasure that I welcome back to the podcast for the second time, Edward Denniston.
The poems I'm about to read are from my latest collection, Vital, published in October 2023 by Compost Poetry. The collection is signposted by 8 epigraphs, signposts as much for myself as indeed for the reader. The two opening epigraphs are as follows. Lord, I cannot bear the burden by myself. Lord, I cannot go the journey by myself. That's from Reverend Brian Gary Davis. The second one is, soaking up the sun like he was the story's only subject, by Ada Limon. To begin, two poems about finding oneself in the role of grandparent. First, grandchild. Here you are, Rosie Lee, all of 6 months sitting up, awake, alert, innocent of the whole shebang, of what might be fact of the matter stuff. Weeping ice, scorched ground, toxic air, toxic water, a virus surviving in our midst, the odd choir of hope into which you've been thrown, human being. What to say, Rosie, youngest of three, watcher, follower, little or nothing to add except maybe, for what it's worth, a heedless hope. At dawn or dusk over reed beds, the soft feather glide of a barn owl. Or the cool-headed fox perched on a wall whose path has been crossed. Or the hen harrier quartering a moorland. Such greetings might deepen a breath, steady or staggering lease of life. Driving a grandchild home from school. Putin and his hollow henchmen, who are more than likely men, his generals and soldiers, who are more than likely men, have invaded Ukraine, are bombing Ukraine, are burning Ukraine, are killing Ukrainians, women, babies, children, men. Putin practiced this method in Syria on Syrians. Women, babies, children, men. This barbarity is only days old. With the radio off, we're driving the military road when you tell me there's a lemur in Madagascar that's almost extinct. Extinct. Said as if you'd always known the word. It's because of people, you say. Reminding me you're nearly seven. Your heart set on a computer game. Ukraine, Ukraine. Soon word and images will reach you, Sam. And there's nothing this granddad can do. The following four poems, I suppose one might say, they're about what nature does to us. We who think, perhaps in some ways, we're beyond nature. Lockmuck. On the gravel shore of a ribbon lake, shilly-shallies of weightless rain dampen colour. Rock, trees, grassy slopes. There's the sketchy throat noise of beast and bird, stony slosh of a whipped-up surface. I am out of my depth, have no depth. I'm all but skin deep. The gap. In the Maumean gap, the gap of the birds, when a south wind gusts, a galvanized gate has drain holes that flute an ethereal tune. Not the music of spheres, stars or gods, but music from a galvanized five-bar gate hung between posts in a mountain gap. Singing as the booted walker stands and listens, somehow unable to depart. Trees. This need to stand amongst venerable trees, root and branch, they're reaching out, sustainers of heart and lung. Overhead, ordained to sing, beneath my feet, the whisper of roots, endless sky to earth to sky, capillary pull. I hear oratorio. Trees might bear me in mind. Listen, after a downpour, the breathing space between each drop, shimmer of a leaf, in their hush of prayer to stand amongst them, aloft in light of the earth. A child loves a wise adult. Season. One autumn there was a man who lost the woman he loved. He found himself obliged to sweep and gather up leaves, prune shrubs he couldn't name. He bought a block of post-its to remind each morning there were things to do. The drop in temperature arrived, and rain and sleet. In February, he couldn't be found. Someone said it was the word, spring. People kept saying, spring. Repair shop. How good it must feel, brother, to be an expert fixer of the bicycle. Derailleur, cable strain, caliper. Me standing by the bench, failing to name each part as you work away with so few words. At ease with the art of disassembling, reassembling, knowing how it all fits. I want to tell you there's nothing more beautiful than a bicycle in good working order. And then you are old. Thanks for the line, Martha. Not poorly or unwell, just old. Or so I've been told by the step, the slope, the slippery slope. The sheep path, the cliff top said it. Matter-of-factly, and then you are old. Can't you get to your feet without using your arms? That's just the way of it. Or so I've been told. And then you are old. This is a kind of love poem, I suppose. Husbandry. From the back door you shout across the small patch of grass and the 20 or so steps to the room where you might be forgiven for thinking I'm at my desk making a love poem for your birthday. But I'm not. I'm out of sight in the garden's dark corner on top of the compost heap, aerating with a fork succulent rot, decay, mulcher as I am of leached soil, exhausted clay.
And just like that, we are heading back to the United Kingdom, this time to the coastal town of Portsmouth, for another returning stormer who joined us for the first time in 2022 to share poems from his chapbook, Ariel Sweet Shop, and he's also taken part in our annual Pride episode. This poet has a husband called Matt and nine mostly well-behaved cats, and his work has appeared in places like Fevers of the Mind, Feral Poetry and The Madrigal. Today, I'm delighted to welcome him back to share poems from his first full poetry collection, The Breadcrumb Trail, which has just been published by Jane Studio Press. And you might recognise some of his work as he was recently featured on another fantastic podcast, this time A Thousand Shades of Green, hosted and produced by the always luminous Susan Richardson. So it's with enormous pleasure today that I hand you over to Lawrence Moore.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Moore, and I'm extremely happy to be making my fourth appearance on Eat the Storms, coinciding with the release of my first full-length poetry collection, The Breadcrumb Trail, published by Jane Studio Press. The whole process of creating The Breadcrumb Trail has been a very joyful one for me, not just the writing of the poems, but also watching them take on new life as my publisher and gifted illustrator Jane Cornwell began adding her own visual interpretations and fortifications of the whole story arc contained inside the book. It's the collection of fantasy, of nonconformity and of love, and I hope these poems give you a pleasurable taste of what lurks within the pages. Raindrop and Ruby, what must the tooth fairies think? Not the prefects who obligingly take shape beside the sleeping child's pillow to perform a graceful swap and fleet escape, but those who entered fairy school with talents too unruly, now left to lug their plate-sized coins like Raindrop in search of Ruby. What will she surmise on dodging sozzled revellers and strange metallic tubes, unheard of in Victorian times when last they turned her loose? When she leaves onerous letterbox, glides under door and over threshold before she performs the official rite, will it seem worth it as she accelerates into the night? We may be sure. For what judgment would be filed against this contract between a tooth fairy and her child? In the opening line of my second poem, Below the Aging Twisted Oak, the words below and oak are both written in quotation marks, what first appears not always being what is true. By phone light. Below the aging twisted oak, I dare the monsters in, invite my fingers to dance by phone light. I come to this place for contradictions, mutations, curveballs, to offer memories of my lost for the aid of my must-be-found. I ask that passers-by mistake me for a glowworm, that I am left to lever words like windows until they open onto the land I walk in dreams. Now for a hang on in there and keep believing poem, one of my favourite types to write. Sebastian Stephen. Sebastian plays with his age-old cards, shuffles again when defeat stings hard, spurns all suggestions for blaming tools, tries not to worry who frames the rules, plagued by the doubt that weighs him down, stalling escape near the edge of town. What if convictions are only bluffs, searching their eyes and I can't find love? Held by vision he makes his stand, carrying fears through a distant land. Stephen unfurls at the sound's decline, silence condones what he casts behind, sticks to the script when the darkness chafes, pictures his absence then knows them safe, never to finish the game begun, never restarting, perhaps with one. Burning propellants, however slight, nursing a dream in refracted light. Held by a vision he makes his stand, carrying fears through a distant land. 7 years later and 6 years wed, Sebastian and Stephen awake in bed, folded together in love so sure, feeling impossible, tasting more, nothing impossibly far from reach, thousands of bottles still fringe the beach, millions of stars in a prayer-filled sky, twinkling on leaf and bough, you and I. Held by vision we make our stand, carrying fears for a distant land. Despite being a borderline atheist, I sometimes like to perform this next poem with my hands together, as it feels so much like a prayer. Thank you. Thank you for the heady days of half-knowings, for the yous and me's of uncertainties that hover around our hearts. Thank you for the starts that may never finish, all wisdoms diminished by wayward butterfly wings, for the singing of songs too shy for a true love's dotings. Thank you for the hopeless hopings that come with these conditions, rude mutterings, split decisions, the staggers and sways of fate and fortune's tease. Thank you for these idiocies, strange explorations, succumbents above our stations. Thank you for their realizations we trust will arrive on cue. This poem was first published in the beautifully crafted Poetry as Promised literary magazine. Fairies exist. Some people dream of sunset red skies, never quite reach them, never know why. Happy to sing society's moors, fairies exist and I will be yours. Other folks' loves are lost in retreat, scattered and scarred by first springtime heat, yearn for the forest, hide from the trees, fairies exist and so does the breeze. Foolish lips falter, slowly turn old, grow to abide, then worship the cold, comfortably coy without getting kissed. When will they learn that fairies exist? Bitter mouths prowl the touchlines and laugh, always the editors, rarely the drafts. leave them to prowl, no need for applause. Fairies exist, and I will be yours. Like many in the breadcrumb trail, this last poem is somewhat autobiographical, being inspired by the start of my relationship with my now husband, Matt. I met a witch. When I was young, I jumped from grace and secret things clicked into place. Like apple falling from the tree, I met a witch who poisoned me. He'd practiced long his casual airs, haphazard hopes, indifferent stares. I guessed them for a slim disguise to shield the darkness from these eyes. But darkness came and came in barbs, such vitriol they made me laugh. Offence was feigned, though soon was gone, betrayed a smile that ranted on. Emboldened now from poison blurred, I watched as something warmer stirred, assumed control, so little fuss, till we were drunk, the both of us. Sung catchy songs still no one knows, then skipped around on twinkle toes. For shallow space we shone too bright, cavorted out and faced the night. The folks who saw all shook their heads, consumed by existential dread. In every spear ill temper threw lay fear of sipping poison too. Unopened minds, our hearts laid bare, yet having too much fun to care, on broomstick steed away from land, more keenly drawn by magic's hand. When I was young, I jumped from grace, and secret things clicked into place. Like apple falling from the tree, I met a witch who poisoned me with love. Thanks for listening, and thank you also to Damien for having me on your wonderful show once more.
We are playing yo-yo today between the United Kingdom and the Republic of Ireland, as we're now back here in Ireland and heading down to West Cork for a poet who has a degree in applied philosophy and French and has been writing poetry since childhood, and in 2019 returned to University College Cork to study creative writing. I recently heard her read at the always incredible Lime Square Poets. She was reading from her new collection, and I immediately sent her a message and said, please come onto the podcast. So I'm over the moon to welcome her here today for the first time. She won the Winter Solstice Poetry Competition and co-curated Brandon as Poetry Town for Poetry Ireland. She's been featured in places like the aforementioned Lime Square Poets, Sling Slang, Culture Nights and Cork World Book Festival, and has had work appearing in places like Drawn to the Light, Wexford Women Writing Undercover, Blue Mondays and Long Island Sounds. Today, sharing poems from her debut poetry collection, Elemental Skin, published by Revival Press, this is Catherine Ronan.
Winter Hope. I knew you would come, invincible sun. Rebirth from darkness. Clocks burn and turn. Stone-singing ancestors face the same sky. Mistletoe glows, fiery ankles feast. On the darkest day, Jupiter and Saturn kiss. Fingers frosted blue trace ancient nights. You offer me the veiled chalice of begin. I crawl out of winter's cave, newborn in your sight, squinting at your song written in the tree. I knew you would come, invincible sun. Hymn. In the iron lung of the working man's club, he swallows whiskey neat, recites the fourth sorrowful mystery of worn rosary, and strokes his palate with a tongue craving well water, a taste of flaked paint, ore and ditch. This magic's a new thirst for success, beyond the constant sound in his pockets, loose change, black tissues, and a picture of his mother proudly washing her hair in a rusty barrel of harvested rain. He stands his thin collar up and makes a fish of staggering back to the numberless flat. without removing a thread. He yellows the bed. Gooseberries burst in his mouth. Eggs bubble begging for salt. He falls asleep for 2 years before they find him. Skinless and nameless. Him. First kiss. We bob up and down in your father's boat on the deepest lake in Tregumna. Bodies never reach the bottom, as in the dark descent to ripple eel beds. Skeletal fingers calcified in crevices catch scalps in murky half-light. Wearing tight grey Levi's, a white grandfather shirt, and a real leather belt that sunny, mystical afternoon. Your teeth a shrine, your lips the holy grail. I never confess that I cannot swim. Promise of a first kiss outweighs any drowning. I pass your house boarded up now. What would a second first kiss taste like after all these years? Licorice or ginger, I wager, unless you are dead. Anyway, we are all dying now, eating memories. Across the universe. I expect to see you around every corner, especially when it rains. But I know you footprint a different world now. We embraced here on cobbled paths, threading the same blanket dream, laughing at the moon lying on its back. I know your song rising from the river, stroking my legs on the corner of Patrick Street. You always did keep magnets in your pockets. Do you ever see me in clinking celebrations? Feel me dancing in the pale silver snake of your lazy cigarette break? I see you everywhere, hear you everywhere, sleep with you in the eye of every storm. I miss you. Black Eagle. We gallop as one over yesterday's land, nostrils flaring, riding tailwinds, grass and dirt rising, but no blood today. Take me bareback into ancient ritual. Unbridled mystic of the wild, thrashing in roaring dark seas, crossing fast and furious white water. Straddle, Black Eagle, climb out of that ravenous place we once called ours. I hear you, whisperer, speaking to my saddened soul. I see you, witch, gasping in all your purple glory. Tell me, what news of home? Sing to me of tomorrow. Feathers. In the market bar, you fill my forehead with tarring, shaving, exorcism sticking to the roof of your mouth, spitting stories of St. Kevin's. God, you are exciting. Sweeney turned mad after war stamped his eye, strayed in nakedness before trees embraced him. I eagle you again, cup your warm swallow's laugh. Trust this crow eye. I will feather you home. Bridget. Cupped flame of sunbeams and snow, cosmic power of renewal. Oak sap rises to kiss your fingers, spring tides bathe your feet. You are sketched moon, fractured sun, first flower of spring in a druid's fist. born between two thresholds, you hold the hand of all labours. Our Mary of the Gael, we tie magic ribbons and rags to your holy wish trees, sing songs over ancient rivers. Protector of poets, smiths, healers, we kneel before your mantle of stars. Bridget, carried from Iona to Bethlehem, you inhale the dark, exhale the light.
My final guest today, before we step behind the storms to chat with CEO of Cheltenham Poetry Festival, Anna Saunders, I'm delighted to welcome a first-timer to Eat the Storms, whose debut poetry collection, High Jump as Icarus Story, is soon to be published by Banshee Press. They are the 2023 Obsidian Foundation Fellow and a 32 poems featured emerging poet, with work in places like Guernica, 14 Poems, The London Magazine, Poetry Ireland Review and The Stinging Fly. Currently pursuing a PhD in literary practice at Trinity College, I'm delighted to welcome to Eat the Storms poet and essayist Gustav Parker Hibbett.
Hey Damien, thanks so much for having me on Eat the Storms. I'm going to read a few poems from my forthcoming collection, High Jump as Icarus Story, which is being published this July with Banshee Press. The collection draws a lot from the years I spent doing High Jump, the event in track and field when I was in secondary school, as well as from things like classical mythology and pop culture. With the collection, I think I was really interested in exploring the ways we use myths and like cultural figures to narrate our lives and understand our relationships to the world around us. And I think what that looks like when you're in a marginalized body, or you might be sort of excluded from narratives that maybe pretend to be universal. I'm gonna start with a poem called In Which I Dream That I Sing Like Leanne LaHavas. In Ghost, there is a staircase Leanne climbs, spiraled, gilded, effortless, royalty on their way to bed. Earthy marble steps in rabbit slippers, a voice entitled to itself, to ease. I dream one night that I am singing along to this, my notes there next to hers. A palace guest, I am timid but accurate, a shadow sidecar on her sheet music while she walks the halls with nowhere else to be. She stays until the crescendo in my range, and I manage mimicking everything except her ease. The carefree way her timbre drapes a robe across its shoulders. On the first chorus, she takes the first few steps, up a few, then back down, poses sitting with a hand across her forehead, head leaned backwards, and I follow in these acrobatics, near the best I've ever been when I'm awake. I almost believe that I belong here, cloaked in opulence, pearled with grace notes, but the next chorus comes soon after the first one. At the stairs already, she turns to climb. I have only ever stopped, dropped an octave here, and matched her motions from the ground floor, shadow cast across a fall. But this time, I begin with her, always with the ghosts of us in tow, swooning at the base of the stairs, and when she starts to climb, my voice moves with her, is her. Clad in femme divinity, I am grand, insatiated, shameless, celebrated without need to be. My triumph, like the time a ballet dancer takes to float before they land. Until I wake, I've proven everything I ever needed to. My performance here is not a ticket into more rooms I will have to sing to stay in. The next one is called Self-Portrait as the Form of Other Jumpers, and it's in three parts. The first one is called Ivan Ukov. Sore winner, I have been known to wallow in my better facets, suck out, savor the marrow of my positives, hammer, hone my prettiness until it's sharp, becomes its own evidence. I've always had a tendency to genuflect in front of what I see as undeniable. Pele making form, technique, and art, getting so good that no one could deny him wonder, beauty just for beauty's sake. Sure, what's the fun of being good if you don't get to stop and bathe in it? Two, Stefan Holm. You are at your most practical when you find yourself with less to work with, over-serious. When the margin is so small between machine perfection and the lowest benchmark that you can afford to meet, you need to narrow. Turn yourself into a textbook. Seek beauty only in the parts of you that translate to precision. Find pleasure in the simple, in that which never strays outside of brutal tidiness. This calculus is nothing personal. It behooves you to quiet that which strains against this winnowing. 3. Javier Sotomayor. I'll admit, at times I prize my smoothness over all other enlightenments, find that there is satisfaction to be had at fitting into grooves. I live for moments when this magic happens without thinking. For example, songs that script direct my movement with their bass draw me into pocket moments where I see myself outside my inner criticism, can remove the glosses of my double consciousness and dance. Live only in that dancing. All right, the next one I'm going to read is called High Jump as Divination. The second last step is the most important. There are said to be those who can tell if someone's going to clear their jump just by watching the way their body dips, how much upward force they generate, the angle of their planted knee. It's crucial, make or break. How you get down governs how you fly. You either leave with wings or you stay human, decided in the moment just before the moment. You take videos of yourself, cut them off before the jump, then scramble them so you can't remember which result each run-up led to. Watch your yellow jumping shoes hit the mark again and again until you blur into a queue of selves in uniform, a tense flutter of shoelaces, halo of dust dislodged, like a moonwalker. Learn to read this language like a kind of augur. You'll either make it or you won't. The last one I'm going to read is called Upon Leaving My Labyrinth, and is dedicated to my partner, Abby. Summer outside. You are noble, gorgeous Theseus, and I am. You are filled, resplendent, with all the glory strength of Athens, and I am. Minoan sun blue like I've never seen. Waves and water blinding, heaping light amnesia, and the width of your arm, the sand, flowery. You are heart-strong hourglass, noble Theseus. You carry me like something willless, sunburned. There's something softly sanguine in submitting. You are Theseus, noble, soft, expansive, whimsical. I am asking, hero, will your great ocean body hold me like this, buoyant? Will you hold me, let me lose what I've been, what I'm waiting? Small. Theseus. Power only in you, only in those dimples made benevolent. Something deep, safe to lose myself. Theseus, look, I know you're only. I know mortality, vulnerable, so lost. I know we're all like me. Look, I know. I've been asking for God, goddess, mother, savior. I can see how selfish. God, don't you think I grew up reading books where knights, white horses, princess towers, and I know it's selfish, but I'm asking, Carrie, save me. Simple, heart small, summer black boy that I am. I know you want to be a god, so please just can you leave me buoyed, god-held, guiltless, found for fucking once, Theseus. Today, lover, please, will you act my archetypal goddess? Will you let me, selfish, lovely, yours? Lover, on this open, sunspun beach, let me. Can I for this minute stop existing in your... Thank you so much for having me again. As I mentioned, the collection's coming out in July, so look out for it this summer. And yeah, thank you.
And now, as I mentioned earlier, it's time to chat with Anna Saunders, the CEO of the Cheltenham Poetry Festival that's about to go live on the 19th of this month. This is Behind the Storms. Today on the podcast, I'm delighted to welcome the CEO and founder of Cheltenham Poetry Festival, Anna Saunders, here today to talk to us about the upcoming festival, which kicks off on Friday the 19th of April and runs until Saturday the 27th of April. Anna herself, of course, is a renowned poet whose most recent collection was A Touch of Prohibitions in 2022. You've already heard her previously on the podcast reading from Feverfew, published by Indigo Dreams in 2021, and other collections include Ghosting for Beginners, Burne Jones and the Fox, and Kissing the She-Bear. Anna is also a writing mentor, and I'm eternally indebted to Anna, not just for her input into my collection, but for the time we spent working together on my full collection Enough back in 2022. Anna, thank you so much for joining me today on Behind the Storms.
Thank you for inviting me. It's lovely to chat to you again, Damien.
It feels like it's been so long, so it's lovely.
It's been way too long. It has.
Well, listen, before we dive into your poetry, perhaps we should talk about the most important thing that's going on right now, because we're just less than 2 weeks away from kickoff to Cheltenham Poetry Festival 2024. What was the impetus originally back in 2011 for kicking off the Cheltenham Poetry Festival? Like, you kicked it all off in the Cheltenham Town Hall, if I'm correct.
We did. Thank you. That's great of you to notice. Well, basically, I had a huge appetite for poetry and I wanted a feast. I was running events on a monthly basis, a wonderful spoken word night called Earshot, amongst other things. And I decided I wanted to dedicate a full week to poetry. And we actually began with 10 days. We began quite large. And one of our first events was, as you say, John Cooper Clarke at Cheltenham Town Hall. So we had 300 pump poetry fans there, a wonderfully riotous night. And we had 40 different events. Some of the other names we had, a little less punky but equally brilliant, were John Hegley, Philip Gross, George Surtees, Claire Pollard, Sam Riviera, some of the new Faber poets. And it was absolutely wonderful. And the response was such, it made me feel that I wasn't the only one for a real hunger for poetry. No. And that gave me the impetus to keep driving the festival forward. And we're now in our 14th year.
It's incredible. Time flies, I suppose, when you're having such a fest, when you're having such a feast of poetry every week.
Yes.
Was it easy to attract people in the beginning? Was it easy for you to say, listen, you know, we're having this going on. Do you want to take part?
It was surprising, really, how well we did. I think there were a lot of poetry fans there lurking with with perhaps there were events going on, but there wasn't such a wide spectrum of poetry at the time. John Cooper Clarke, of course, offered something different and brought a lot of people through the door that then thought they'd dip their toes into other kinds of poetry. I had to work really hard. I was running the festival more or less single-handedly for a while, and it was a lot of work, a lot of hands-on work. But there were a lot of people who were really hungry for poetry and who recognised how transformative and life-changing it can be as an art form. We had quite a sense of a party feel from the get-go. The Guardian called us a poetry party with a healthy dose of anarchy, which I loved. And we wanted to have that vibe, you know, have fun whilst being serious about poetry.
And that's continued. Like, I've only sort of come to know the Cheltenham Poetry Festival since it's been online, being sort of locked down here in Ireland when I first sort of contacted and found you guys. But that's the thing about even being in the Zoom room with you all, that there is a sense of family. There is a sense of community. It's not sort of the reader and the listeners. It feels like a group, a community, yeah, who are all there to support each other. And that's extraordinary.
Yeah, I think so, absolutely. I mean, going online rose from a necessity and actually became a wonderful opportunity. Not only have we been able to book some phenomenal international names, obviously that we couldn't really afford to fly over here. We've had Kim Adesione, Joseph Bassano read a few times for us, many, many phenomenal international poets. Safia El Hilo read for us last night, but she's in Washington. brilliant, brilliant poet with Riti Dastardar. And we've been able to program some phenomenal names. I've been working very hard. Zoe has been working proactively to source some exciting names. And we've formed a community, as you say, even though we're in a Zoom room, people have said it's been quite a lifesaver for perhaps people who have been suffering regional and physical barriers. And even though we're online in a Zoom room, there's a real sense of community. I think it's wonderful.
And you mentioned Zoe there. So you have Zoe Brooks and Annie Ellis, who are the Cheltenham team. The three of you are troopers.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you. And it's nice because me and Zoe do the programming between us, and we both read very widely. She's introduced me to poets. I've introduced her to poets. Mm-hmm. And I think it means we have a lovely wide diversity of poets coming to us. You know, poetry for all tastes, really.
That's certainly what it is. Because I was looking at this year's lineup. So you have, you know, people like Liz Berry, David Clark, Matthew Hollis, Matthew M.C. Smith, Chris Lataris, and the Shakespeare First Folio, Nigel Kent, Don Patterson. You know, how is it to narrow down the selection every year? And now that you have this beautiful hybrid of being live, in person and online, you have the Poetry Lounge, you have these online Zooms. Does that help you? Does that make it easier? Like I see in July, you have our Victoria Kenefic and Katrina Naomi coming to join you. Does it make a difference because you're not just restricted to the festival itself?
Absolutely. It's opened up a world of poetry in a way that a small, unfunded festival, such as the Cheltenham Poetry Festival, wouldn't normally be able to manage to bring over some of those names. And we've had poets literally from all over the world. We tend to focus on people, obviously, we can get here for the real festival. So running online does mean that we can recruit from a whole world of poetry. We can really reach out to the whole world in terms of our audiences and in terms of our poets. So we can now perhaps discover a book, read a book by a poet and think, they're incredible. We want to get them, and we can reach out to them. Whilst our taste is very wide, we do aim for excellence.
Yeah.
And in fact, our open mics, we now call them Mic Maestros because they're full of widely published poets. We have poets reading one poem in the Mic Maestro section that maybe with Seren or Bloomsbury or...
But that's, I think, one of the things that is outstanding about the Cheltenham, especially about your online events. That, and again, I'm speaking from experience that I've been to quite a lot, but very often I come and it's not just for the featured poet. It's to listen to the open micers. It's to listen to everyone else who's reading in the room because the talent is extraordinary. And everyone, again, you have the support there and the encouragement. And it really does feel very familial.
Thank you. I mean, we aim to make everyone feel welcome, have a warm and relaxing environment, but still to aim high. We always book inspiring poets, poets that have important things to say, are at the top of their game, really. Some other people that we've actually had online are Sean Borrigel. We've had Chelsea Bingham from America, Roy McFarlane, Jason Allen Paysant, Polly Atkin. I mean, the names go on forever, really. The wonderful Joe Clement, Butcher's Dog, wonderful poet. Nora Najarian, Caleb Parkin. So it's a kind of who's who of poetry, I feel.
It really is. But that, again, adding all that together and still having your feet on the ground, the Cheltenham Poetry Festival is renowned for the talent that it acquires. But yet it's still so grounded, and that's amazing to be able to keep that balance and not sort of, you know, distance yourself from the community.
Yes.
To really be a part of the community.
We do. We have open mics, Mic Maestros. We have events where people can come and share their work. We're very much part of the community. We established the Gloucestershire School thanks to Fiona Sampson, and we've been raising a glass to Gloucestershire poets living and past every year at the festival. So we always feature some phenomenal locally based, widely published poets, and also poets that have come before them, like Ivor Gurney and Edward Thomas is a big feature this year. But I think what drives us is myself and Zoe, we love poetry, absolutely love it. We're writing constantly, we consume it at a rate of knots. And because we're not commercially focused, it means we put all our energy into this, and the result is less commercial, but of greater value, I feel.
And, you know, talking about your love of poetry, one of the main questions, one of the main reasons for starting this sort of interview series this season is to ask guests about beginning and ask people, how did poetry first grab you? Do you remember? Was it a poet? Was it a poem? Was it a teacher who first inspired you? How did it first sort of take hold?
That's a lovely question. I think one of the first writers that blew me away was Dylan Thomas when I was passed a book by my father, actually. And it was a lovely edition with sepia pages. The spine was cracked. It was a beautiful old edition. And I fell in love with that rich musicality and the way the poetry, the language ascended, or as Dylan would say himself, how the language lifted off the page. And it sort of demonstrated to me alchemy of poetry and how it can transport you. It can help you transcend your surroundings, yet also stay very rooted. So I love poetry even more now. I read probably a collection a week at least. My taste is quite wide and varied. I'll tell you one book I'm reading this week, which is The Home Child by Liz Berry, which is a really, really beautiful book. And it's so full of empathy and connection, this book, that's one of the most valuable things about poetry, I think, that it can engender empathy and understanding for other people.
How do you, you must be an extraordinary balancer, because not only are you CEO of Cheltenham Poetry Festival, not only are you reading a poetry collection a week, not only are you a mentor, but you're also an author yourself. You know, you're also a writer and a poet yourself. How does it all fit in? Like you're not, you know, you've been on the podcast before, you've read for us. Your last collection was A Touch of Prohibitions. What's coming next? Is there a pause in between each collection to take time to do other things? Or is the writing sort of always there, a little thing in the background?
The writing's always continuing. I don't have as much time for it as I would like. Though I'm aware that there are some people who get up at six and write, so maybe I'm a bit of a slacker. I'm quite a fast person. I'm a little bit manic. It drives people mad at times. But it does mean the flame of my creativity is always burning. Whether the end result is any good is a different thing, but I've always got ideas, too many. So I'm now working on my seventh book, which is called Provisionally Sub Rosa, which means under the rose. Mm. And it's an expression denoting secrecy or privacy. In legend, the god of desire, Himeros, offered the god of silence a rose in exchange for confidentiality. It was actually, he was given the rose to keep silent about Aphrodite's naughty behaviour.
Wow.
And Under the Rose is very much a book of secrets, full of things that are suggested rather than spoken. And it's full of roses with all their mythical and symbolic properties. Because, of course, the rose has represented the blossom of Aphrodite. Mm. It's been the ingredient of elixirs. It's been obviously relevant to Christian mysticism and alchemy. And it also features in Maud, which is Tennyson's dark, highly charged psychological thriller in verse. And crazy, perhaps, but I'm not rewriting Maud by Tennyson.
Okay.
So that sounds arrogant enough to even suggest that. But I'm giving Maud a voice. Uh-huh. It was the Queen Rose in the Rosebud of Girls in Maud by Tennyson. And I wanted to give her a voice. So that's one of the themes of this book. But at the moment, I just have a lot of poems and I'm not sure whether they all go together.
I think when you're about to, you know, when you're embarking on your seventh collection and they have all been extremely well received and they most of them take pride of position on my bookshelves.
Oh, thank you.
I think you're allowed to do a little bit of rewriting of Maud if you want to.
Well, thank you. I hope Tennyson won't be turning in his grave. But it's a fascinating psychological thriller, Maud, and it's got so many relevant themes. It's got this misogynistic hero who is, I can't use the expression, but it's got the word flag in it. He's very keen. He's a nationalist. He's very keen on war. And there's loads of relevant themes pertaining to what's happening now.
Okay.
So I thought it'd be interesting to play on that, really.
And do you set yourself a deadline or will it happen when it happens? Or is there
I've been writing a lot. I have a lot of poems. A few people are saying to me, haven't you finished that book yet? So that's been galvanizing a bit to get it finished. There's another sequence within it, which is poems about my misspent youth, which is a long time ago, because I'm very old. So a bit like a rather less classy version of your poem set in Paris. Without the designer clothes. And
where was your misspent youth spent?
Oh, well, lots of different places. I am from a place called Hoylake in, well, it was Merseyside when I was born, but it keeps changing between Cheshire and Merseyside. And then I came to Cheltenham when I was 20. So logistically, it's been varied, my misspent youth.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not sure quite where to cut it off because, you know, when do you say it's a misspent middle age and when is it a misspent youth? I mean, it's generated some poems, some of which I will pretend are not about me.
But, you know, that's the thing about artistic license. You know, it's fact and fiction. You know, you write it down and it's up to the reader then to decide whether you're writing about yourself. The eye in poetry, I think, is the most extraordinary thing. I think sort of people perhaps who are reading poetry who are not necessarily writing, who are not writers, always believe the eye is the eye of the poet, whereas to us, it's just a tool that we can sort of step into, but it's not always us.
No, and I think it was... I want to say Denise Levertov, but it wasn't. You can have some people ringing in now to say, that said about no more masks and mythologies and about how she felt within a certain point of her life, she would stop hiding behind masks.
Mm-hmm.
Because I used a lot of mythology and legend to address subjects that for me were perhaps traumatic aspects of my life or things that were intensely personal. And as I get older, I'm still perhaps concealing some of it, but perhaps stepping out a little bit, using those kind of rhetorical devices is a bit less. We'll see. I might still hide behind the character of Maud and slip some of my dodgy stuff in.
Well, I look forward to the misspent use and the dodgy stuff. I also think it's funny to hear, it's interesting to hear that, you know, you weren't born in Cheltenham, but I think sometimes it takes an outsider to come into a town or a city and stir things up. And you have certainly stirred things up with the Cheltenham Poetry Festival. So it's starting on the 19th of April, yes?
It starts on the 19th with a reading with Liz Berry that actually sold out about 2 weeks ago. We still have a few tickets left for Don Patterson. Only because we've hired a humongous chapel. So... You know, the ticket sales are doing well, but we still have some bits and pieces dotted around. We've still got some tickets. I think there's a couple for Matthew Hollis,
okay,
which is going to be wonderful because Earth House is such an incredible collection. And really lovely, rich programme. Carrietta is coming to talk about grief and her new book, Grief's Alphabet, which is wonderful. And we've got some locally sourced brilliant poets as well. And of course, our slam. We've got 15 poets going head to head, but we've only got about... I think about 20 tickets left for that, and we're going to fill the theatre, so that's going to be exciting.
Well, listen, I wish you the best of luck. I'm so delighted that you joined us today to talk about not only the Cheltenham Poetry Festival, but also to fill us in on what's happening with Anna Saunders. I'm already going to go off now and make room on my bookshelf for the new collection. So you go and
thank you, sir.
And off and finish it up.
Thank you. Lovely to talk to you, Damien.
And you too, Anna. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. And just before we go today, I'm going to leave you with one poem which was recently published in the Orphic Review for its first issue. So a huge shout out, congratulations, and thank you so much to Roisin Ní Nochtain and Anne Daly, its editors. This poem of mine is an ekphrastic piece inspired by a painting by Vasily Kandinsky. Kandinsky was an artist who suffered from or was imbued with synesthesia, which meant that his senses often converged. He saw colour when he heard music, and he heard music when he painted. His only child died at the age of 3, and he never had any more children. We never talk about Sivilot. After improvisation number 19 by Vasily Kandinsky. Improvisation number 19. How to leave the body. The eye is the hammer, he said. These shapes are just shells, can be smashed. Unlearning.
colouring outside the lines. Even the soul escapes in the end. Blue, the deepest of all he said of the cello. Perfection in fifths. Even sound didn't get it right at first. Improvisation number what? The counting. 1, 2, 3. Strings. Father. Mother. Son. Stop. Father. Mother. Even on the beach. A shell holds only an echo of the shore. Where do you hold the echo of a son when he's left the body? These shapes are just shells. They do not line up. Blue for a boy. The deepest of all, on a canvas, a chorus can be smashed apart. Poetic peeps and gentle persons, in betweeners and nonconformers, genders all and genders equal, we've reached the end of another episode of Eat the Storms, the poetry podcast. My name is Damien B. Donnelly. I've been your host and producer, and thank you so much for tuning in today, whether that's been on Spotify, Apple, Google, Breaker, Podbean, Player FM, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Castbox, Podcast Addicts, or iTunes. Thank you so much for listening. And also thank you so much, of course, to my fantastic stars on today's show, who have been Sean Hewitt, Lucy Hoyshen, Edward Denniston, Lawrence Murr, Catherine Rowan, and on behalf of the Cheltenham Poetry Festival, the effervescent poetic light that is Anna Saunders. For details on all of my guests today, head on over to www.eatthestorms.com. Click on the podcast section called Listen to the Podcast, and there you will find a blog post for every episode. This was episode 9, season 8, and in that blog post you will find bios, photos, social media handles, and links to where you can find, follow, be fans of all my guests, and of course, most importantly, buy their collections and pamphlets that you've heard on the show today. While you're over there, you'll also find details on The Storms, our journal of poetry, prose and visual arts. You can purchase issue 1, 2 and 3 from there, and hopefully later this year we'll be opening submissions for issue 4. So that's it for another episode. As I said, next week we'll be back celebrating new voices to the podcast, spoken word voices, and we'll be joined by Sheila Ryder, renowned spoken word artist based here in Dublin, who is about to host the Fingal Poetry Festival's regional slams over the coming months. And the winner of each individual slam will of course take part in the Fingal Poetry Festival in September. And a few years ago I was the winner of the Balbriggan Regional Slam and took third place in the finals, so tune in next week for more details. So until then, I hope you are blown away only by poetic storms and not gusty ones, and of course until next time you tune in to your favourite poetry podcast on your preferred podcast platform, please ensure that you stay bloody poetic.
Oh, thank you.